Now, broadcasting on Radio Star Worldwide, it's time for Dr. Rademacher's Prescription for Transformation. Let's tap into your own authentic genius and live the life you desire. Join Dr. Rademacher for an enlightened conversation about our brain intelligence, our body intelligence, and our energy intelligence. And now, here's your host, Dr. Bart Rademacher.
Welcome, welcome. I am Dr. Bart Rademacher, prescription for your transformation, hashtag real people, hashtag real conversations. And we just had some technical challenges just a moment ago, and that's how it is. I'm actually currently here in Miami Airport, flying from the Bahamas back to Tampa. Just did some amazing surgeries this entire week out there using stem cells. And today I'm really delighted to be working again, once again, with Wendy. But I don't know, Wendy. We'll talk about that later.
So you can always get a different producer if you want. You'll end up with a dude, though, just so you know.
No, I'm stuck with you forever because I like you too much. I love you too much. And Simply Aubrey from Simply Aubrey. So welcome to both of you guys. And today is going to be a lot of fun. And I'm actually planning on sitting back and listening to you beautiful women talk about a lot of things. But I really want to introduce a remarkable human being. And that's Aubrey. And why? Because she's got a remarkable story. And it's a story that can inspire anyone. Because of the challenges that were faced in front of her, that were put in front of her, and she made a choice. And that choice was to overcome all these incredible and difficult challenges and to find that best version of herself, becoming an extreme athlete and really being an incredible model for her own son. So welcome, welcome, Aubrey. Thank you for joining me today.
Hello, hello. Thank you, Dr. Bart. Hello, beautiful Wendy. Thanks for having me.
So tell us, I mean, just so you know, and so anybody who's listening in today, maybe for the first time, is that the prescription for your transformation, and it's a hashtag real people, hashtag real conversations, it's about those conversations with real people, real experiences, and it's also about new voices, new solutions for your transformation. It's bringing to the light, you know, personal stories that will help and inspire others to make the shift and the changes in their life. Because it ultimately comes down to a lot of different things that we just simply don't know, that we don't know in our life that could actually make the real difference. And when we get to hear those stories from other people, and what is it that they did to shift in their life, then that's what this platform is designed to do. So I'd love to hear a little bit about, you know, your personal journey, your personal story. I do apologize for all the background noise, by the way. And but also, you know, some of the wisdom that you impart to your clients, because I love a lot of the things that you shared with me just before the show.
Awesome. So, well, just to give a little bit of background to me or about me, I was born in the Philippines to a broken English, full-blooded Filipino. Already had three children of her own from a previous marriage. My father and her fell in love, and at the age of three, came over to the United States as a military brat. Unfortunately, at the age of five, mom and dad split up, and there's always different sides of the story, but the story that I grew up with was I became a poverty mindset child. We lived in housing. We lived on food stamps. We lived on block of cheese. Back in the day, you lived in the project, you ate a block of cheese, and they were so yummy. But you know, the neighborhood didn't show me that I was stuck there. What the neighborhood showed me was so much more than what I could do. And fortunately for me, I had something deep inside that helped me to move. I turned to athletics. And athletics made me go. And athletics, what it did was it got me to turn down everything around me, all the noise, all the racket, everybody that was around me telling me, no, I can't, and this is who you're going to be, and this is your journey, and this is who you're going to stay. I was able to get into athletics and turn all of that off, and it was against me and myself. And fortunately, that fire, and that fire just got bigger and bigger, and fire grew into taking our basketball team to the playoffs for the first time ever. going and getting a volleyball and basketball scholarship, where I then started coaching little boys at the YMCA. And it just fed fire to fire that I just grew. And there, it has taken me a while. Going from a girl raised in a broken English and with four children in poverty, I now can tell you that I've got 56 products on the shelf. I've got 5 or 6 infomercials, another infomercial about to come out in 2 weeks. And I don't even think I'm big or anything. Like, it's just the blessing that I've become, who I've become on. And I still have such a journey to go. I turned 40 in January of the 7th, and I cannot fathom what the next 40 years of my life are going to be, because I've just experienced so much more in the last 40. But here's what's so exciting. Not the journey that I took, but the journey that I was on actually is so relatable to so many other people. I, going from poverty and being engaged to and kid, was an amazing guy. I got to win the award of a domestic violence survivor. That's crazy, but that story got to help so many other women and understand why they were stuck. Growing up, I was like, why don't you leave that guy? He hit you. Oh my God, I totally understand why she never left him. Going from a single, being married, now have a 15-year-old, divorced for 10, being a single mom, broke, how am I going to make it? I've got a kid I got to take care of. I've got to do the hustle, but I also want to stay in shape. How do you balance life but keep yourself in as the priority? So many wonderful things that I've was able to experience over the last 40 years. I honestly can sit with women in any situation, and we can talk for hours. So, Wendy, let's get going.
Sounds good to me.
Well, so here's my question for you. I mean, what is that mindset? You know, what are those key distinctions that allows you to be everything that you want to be, despite the fact that you came from a place that, was, for no better way than saying it, kind of against you?
It was totally. We always start out talking to everybody. It's mainly habits and choices, right? There's two things you can control, and everybody has their life. But I totally believe two things you can control in your own life: how you react to a situation, how you manage your activities. We're all given the same time frame. We're all given the same response. It's how you deliver your response to a situation and how you manage your activities. I remember going back into my sales rep days, and I love being a sales rep because you can make a ton of money doing it, because all you have to do is love on people and relationships sell, right? So I remember taking out, when I was in my sales rep role, and I took out my manager, and the first half of our day, like, offering, we've done more this first half of our day I've ever seen anybody do in a week. You are so productive. And I said, well, as a single mom, every second counts. Because if I want to be able to be there with my son when he gets off the bus, I've got to make an 8-hour day happen in 6 hours. So we've got to move. So I always tell everybody, it's truly the way you respond to your situation. You can accept it or you can reject it. You can reject it with love. Doesn't mean that it's got to be ugly. And you got to manage your own activity, because we all get a choice. And if you don't put yourself as a priority, nothing else is going to happen. Just like when you're on an airplane, they say, okay, if the airplane crashes, the mask is going to fall. Make sure you put your mask on before you put on anybody else's. A lot of people in life with that, right? We forget we've got to go. We've got to eat. We forget we got to work out. We forgot we got to go boxing, because otherwise, so it's the situation that you are dealt with. You can either play the hand or pull another card, right? So just, it's about choices that you make, about things of reactions, and how you manage your time. It's kind of funny too. I tell everybody about the light switch, and I don't know if you've ever heard this story, but I always tell everybody it's like going into a dark room. Out of habit, because it's dark, you're going to flip the switch on. Do what you need to do in that dark room or in the lit room. You work out, out of habit, you're going to turn the light off. But when you go back in the room and it's dark, you got to flip the switch back on. Coming back out, you switch it off. So until you create the habit of, one, reacting, choosing to leave the light always on so you're never going to have to turn the light on and off again, or going in that room when it's only lit and do the activity you need to do in that room, you get to choose. Everything in your life is flipping the switch on and off or choosing to leave it on. It's a matter of just doing it. You get to choose, and that's what's so exciting about life. You don't have to do what you don't want to do, period.
I love it. You know what? Good, perfect. You know, one of the things that I share with people as a performance strategist or life coach is increasing choice, you know, helping people find more choices. Because here's what's true. I mean, you're in charge of your brain, so you're in charge of your thoughts. If you're in charge of your thoughts, then obviously you're in charge of your actions and your behavior and also how you feel about things. And so you are in charge of those things. And unfortunately, so many people are choosing to be a victim. They will tell you that, you know, it's because of where they came from, it's because of the economy, it's because of their age, it's because of their education, you know, what have you. But the truth is, you're absolutely 100% right. You know, it's about making that choice. The challenge that I find sometimes is that, you know, people just don't know how to choose or what to choose. And so here's my question for you. And I have tons of respect for a single mom taking care of a child, totally committed to their growth and their well-being, at the same time, you know, creating a livelihood. And then in addition to that, taking care of you. That's impressive.
Thank you.
So how, you know, when you say time management, right?
Yeah.
How do you specifically do that? How do you make those decisions about what it is that you need to do, or how do you organize your day? Because I'm kind of curious, because for most people, I think that's one of their biggest challenges.
So I'm a sticky note junkie. Like I do sticky. I'm a sticky note junkie. So the reason why I start with my clients and I say we all have cell phones. And we all have timers. Just like we are at school, we're all used to sitting for 50 minutes. So if you're doing something, I always say set a timer so that you're completely devoted and you're done and you're in that for 50 minutes. So 50 minutes, your timer goes off, boom, there's a 5-10 minute break to go refresh your mind, go do whatever. So your activities are set in place. I personally set an alarm to wake up. I set an alarm to start saying my prayers. I set an alarm to go make sure that I am on the stair stepper and I'm stepping. I have an alarm that says, get up because you're about to take on the world. You need to go cook breakfast for your son. Hey, 6:30, you've got an alarm that says you need to get the boy ready to get out the door. So there's reminders constantly. And what most people don't get is we have technology that can kick us into our own habits. But because we get so wind up into activities, we forget where time goes. So I'm totally all about activities. So I have a planner, right?
Okay.
This is all next week. So I look like this blue, this is my personal morning time. And at 5 o'clock, that's where I start my prayer. And I write in there, I'm praying. And then at 6 o'clock, I wake up my kid and I write in there, woke up my kid and run. So.
I love it.
So it just shows you, and what a lot of people forget is we spend so much time on Facebook and in the internet that people say, I don't have time to work out. Well, bull, you probably have 45 minutes of Facebook and you can go work out. So we do a lot of time activities with my clients. So I don't know if you can see it. Is it coming up?
No, we can't. Oh,
there.
Yeah, there it is.
So prayer. Can you see that prayer? Drive Justin. Mm-hmm. I worked out my girlfriend rehab with Dawn. I went and had breakfast with Shelley. I worked. I sent an email to a CEO. I updated my resumes. And so it's activities. It's all about, did my light go? Oh, there it goes. It's all about just staying strict on what your activities are. And then at the end of the day, I say, okay, what are my priorities? What didn't I get to? Here's my weekly. Did I do my prayers? Did I go work out Dawn? Here's my priorities, you know. My infomercial's coming out. Did I do advertising for my infomercial? Did I do my product information? So it's a matter of making sure all your activities are in front of you and you see it. And you know, none of this says play on Facebook. It doesn't. It doesn't say that, because I've got so much I want to get in the day that a play on Facebook doesn't happen until Sunday. I get messages every now and then on Facebook, so I play. But it's got to keep your priorities straight. So when I sit with a client, I'm saying, okay, what is your priorities? What do you have to get done? And let's rearrange that. If you have to work from blah to blah, you got to calculate drive time. You got to calculate makeup time. You got to calculate doing your hair time, shower. Let's look at what your time looks like, and let's squeeze in 10 minutes here or 5 minutes there. That's better than 0 minutes. Right? And here's the thing. If it doesn't work, God, you have tomorrow. You get to try again. And then if it doesn't, still doesn't work out, we'll tweak it. And then guess what? You get to try again. If you don't get to try out, guess where you are? You don't have to worry about it.
So how much time do you give yourself to fill out your weekly timesheet the way you did? What do you give yourself, like set an alarm, like, okay, I have 10 minutes to fill out my next week's itinerary, or how do you do that?
I do it all on Sunday. So most people really know what their week looks like. So like during my week here, I'll fill out next week on what I need to get done. But priority, I already know from 4 o'clock in the morning until 8 o'clock, all personal. Like it's me praying, me eating, me fixing my son's lunch and breakfast, me driving him to school. Like my son and myself are my priorities from 4 a.m. until 9. And then from 9 to 6, boom, you got me. I'm working heads down, ready to go. In the middle of that, it's a drive time to go grab my son. But I do it all on Sunday. And you would be so surprised how much time you actually get in. I mean, I've got a human trafficking act I'm working on. I've got an infomercial that's coming out. My son is launching a DVD product that he's got for youth fitness. I mean, there's a ton of things that you can do. I run a multi-level marketing company. There's a lot of things you can do as long as you manage your life. And here's the thing. If you love it, it's not a job. And I can't get any more fulfillment than helping people healthy, wealthy, and then I get to love on my kid. Like what else did you want?
Nice. So how long have you been this organized? How long have you been doing this?
So I probably have been really organized all my life, but I really haven't written down hour by hour what I do. Probably until 2 years ago. I caught myself looking on Facebook. I'm just going to do it for 5 minutes. I look up and it's like, how did 2 hours just pass? So I'm like, okay, I've got to break that habit. Like where am I falling short? So I started documenting my days. And it's the same thing that I tell my clients. I need them to document what they eat, right? Like, okay, if you eat a piece of candy at 9 o'clock, I need you to write down I ate a piece of candy. If you drank water at this time, I need you to tell me how much you drank. Because the more organized you are, the more you understand what's going on, and the more clarity I get on, yes, you are gaining 20 pounds. Maybe it is all the coffee that you ate and all the sugars and the lattes. Because they didn't even realize they were having 5 or 6 until they actually wrote it down, right? So it's the matter of being aware and being aware of yourself, just more self-awareness of the activities and what you do throughout the day. And what
you All right, so I have a question for Wendy. How organized are you?
How organized? Okay, here. For example, I'll let you see my schedule for radio.
Yay!
All right. So I guess I'm pretty organized.
Yeah, you have to be, right?
You do, and especially because like with what I do, time is money. And if I get sometimes 4 minutes between shows, God forbid I should actually pee, because I'll have like six shows in a row. So I was like, one of those things where like, you literally have to plan everything out, especially at work. So my work schedules, because I do have a couple jobs, everything is very, very organized. My personal time, I don't have much of that. But when I do have personal time, it's usually cleaning the house or doing laundry or studying up for my next filming that I'm doing. So I'm very, very organized in that aspect. Even have like on my refrigerator, I have one of those whiteboards. So I know exactly what time, you know, what day that my bills come in, what time do they have to be, what do they have to be paid? What is the best to make sure it's paid on time? How many days early do I need to pay it to make sure I get the due date? Literally, I have that on my refrigerator too. Adulting is not fun.
Adulting, no, it's not.
Adulting is not fun. I don't like being an adult. I miss being a kid.
I tell my son that all the time. Relax, dude. You got plenty of time to have to worry about all these little things.
Yep, mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I find fascinating about you, Aubrey, is that, you know, you're so incredibly organized. And I think for many people, that would seem like it's too much. It's too much work. But here's what's true about it, though, is that we all have the same number of hours per week. It's 168. And so if you're not planning it, if you're not scheduling it the way that you want it, then somebody else will or something else will. And that's kind of unfortunate, because then you're truly wasting your time and truly wasting your opportunities to do what it is that you want to do. You know, my personal challenge is that, you know, being a surgeon, and you know, I'm not always in control of that time. And I've been doing this for years and years and years. You know, it's sort of like I can't be talking to a patient and say, okay, your time's up, you know, next. You know, that doesn't work. So, you know, I've gotten away from that challenge. And my challenge today is that, you know, I have so many projects that I do, is that I very much underestimate the time that I'm going to spend on this. And so then I get very involved with something and then find out, you know, that I had scheduled an hour and now it's actually 3 hours later. So it's a matter of having that discipline that says, okay, I'm going to spend 50 minutes, like you said, on this project, and then I'm going to go to the next one, and then I'm going to go to the next one. And that way, you obviously will achieve a lot. What I respect so much about you, and it's very, very true, most people that are incredibly successful and very effective in their life, is they get up early. What time do you get up, Wendy?
I was up at 6 this morning. On the weekends, I'm usually up by 5.
Nice. So getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. It does. It really does. And it gives you serenity time, too, because your time usually during the day is push, go, 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 push, go, go. What can I do next? I got to get it all in. Where if you're up really early and everybody's still asleep, it's being up and being at peace and being in calmness. And you're able to like really reflect on who you are and start loving yourself. I think that's the biggest problem that most people forget, is they got to love themselves before they can do anything else outside of their own home.
Mm-hmm. Do you normally work out in the mornings or at night?
I'm sorry?
Do you normally work out in the mornings or at night?
In the mornings. I work out in the mornings. I used to work out like 5:30 in the morning, and now it's pushed back, depending on where I've got a girlfriend who I can't blame it on this, but she took a flu shot and she got paralyzed up to a year now. She's been struggling with coming back and being so I'm rehabbing her right now. So depending on what time she gets up and she starts to get moving, I go and rehab her for an hour and then I hit the gym. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I work out in the mornings. But here's what's crazy, because I work out of my own house. So after my 15 like straight focus, I've got a 10-minute break that I usually do, like bathroom, walk around, refocus. But I get on my trampoline and I run really fast on my trampoline for like 35 seconds. In your heart, that's you. But your heart just gets really, really fast, and you get to wake up. And if you go really fast and you do it right, you actually can get really great rebounded muscles with it, because the rebounder is amazing. But you get sculpted muscles by just running really, really hard, and just like if you were to be running a full sprint. But I do that for like 35 seconds, 4 or 5 times during the day. So it's really fun.
Wait. And you do that on a rebounder, you said?
I do.
Nice.
Yeah. And then at sometimes at lunch, I have a sauna in the bedroom. So sometimes I do infrared sauna, depending on the day.
So you're a wealth of great ideas. So when you talk to your clients.
Yes.
So you talk about what's your approach? I mean, there's obviously a lot of different things that you'll work with them. It's nutrition, it's fitness, it's lifestyle, it's mindset. Just take us through it a little bit of what you do.
So I always tell everyone that fitness and nutrition is just like water and air. You need water and air. You can't have nutrition without your fitness. You can't have your fitness without your nutrition. They kind of go together just like air and water. So I kind of explain the fact that, yes, you need your weights. Yes, you need your cardio. Because I always tell everybody, lifting weights works you inside. Cardio works your outside in, so that when you reach your beautiful muscle, skins touch your muscle, you've got nice, activated, strong, mean, fighting muscles. But you can't get the skin to touch the muscle unless you got your nutrition in there. So I talk about a lot of nutrition. I talk about high nutrition value foods. I actually go into their pantries and I stick stickers on pantry foods that need to be eaten and never rebought. And then I do stickers on pantry foods that can be repurchased, but buy them organically. High fructose corn syrup is going to kill us. And that's got to get out there to everybody. They've got to get that out of their diet. It's crazy. High fructose corn syrup is illegal in other countries, and they serve it in everything we eat here in the United States. So if that's a one plug, that's one plug right there. So, but I move people out of their pantry and start living in their refrigerator where there's live organisms. Our bodies, if you really looked at it, you went, and doctor, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but with all the background that I've got, I'm going back to school for my third degree as a registered dietitian. If we do it right, within a whole year, all of our cells are brand new. Like, we have all new cells. Like, we're just replenishing new cells. So if explaining that, if we're feeding ourselves live organisms and our cells are replenishing, don't we want to replenish them with live food out of our fridge? Something live that if you leave it out in 3 days, it's dead. That's live food. I tell everybody, or do you want to feed it dead food that's living in your pantry that can live there forever? Then I get that whole kickback, well, it's more expensive to eat healthy. I'm like, okay, yeah, until your prescription bill is $450 a month. Huh? Well, going back to my grandparents are in their 80s. They lived out of their garden, and they ate a lot of salmon because he loved Alaska. They had a yacht out in Alaska in a nice little place. So they ate a lot of fish and a lot of vegetables and fruit from their garden. They have no prescriptions they are paying for. Mm-hmm. Telling my people, how would that look in your life if you continue to eat out of your pantry that's dead? What is your bill going to look like? Because high blood pressure, high this, high cholesterol, high everything. You've got to take all these medications to bring all your highs down. And then you got to take medications to bring you up, to wake up, to take medication to bring you down. Where back in the day, doctors literally saved lives by high nutrition diets, high doses of vitamins, high doses of nutrition, and used prescription drugs for what they were made of. Short-term rehab, not long-term stay on. It was short-term and replenish their body with high nutrition diet. So it starts here. And that's the biggest awakening. When I pull everything out of somebody's pantry and they're like, oh my gosh. So I ask them, I'm like, tell me this. Tell me how come it's so hard for you to drink glasses of water, but yet you can go to the wine bar or the beer bar and drink 12 gallons of wine or 100 glasses or 12 bottles or whatever of wine and liquor. That's because there's a drug in there that tells the little guy back here and says, oh, you can drink more water or you can drink more wine, it feels good. Well, that is the same chemical in all of our foods. Our foods are telling us, you are still hungry. Block that little guy that says you're full and tell our brain to keep eating. You're not full, and so stomachs. We start programming our body back to the natural way we were created. If you're eating an apple, your saliva glands go, hey, brain, here comes an apple, get ready for it. Hey, belly, or if you're eating a piece of steak, your body's going to go, hey, we're eating steak. Get ready for it. There's no chemical in there that's going to tell it. When you're full, real natural organisms, it's going to go into your brain and go, yo, we're full. Stop eating. So amazing to see my clients go, I never thought about that. And then I say, if it has a shelf life, where do you think that shelf life is going to go straight to your butt? And that usually wakes up. Right?
Mm-hmm. And I agree with you 100% on the high fructose corn syrup. I've always been against it. And I see what it's doing to people's health, to their teeth. To their teeth. Oh my gosh. You can tell so much from a person by looking at their teeth.
Yes. Yeah. I've gotten away from high fructose corn syrup that when I go out to eat in a restaurant, I get a migraine immediately with the high fructose corn syrup. So I hardly even go out anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, one of the biggest challenges, you know, I find with people, because everything you say is absolutely correct. But the biggest challenge is that people don't have that foresight. They can't put themselves, you know, in their later years of life and imagining what it would be like. You know, it's all immediate. It's all right now. It's all, you know, self, you know, gratification in this very moment. They want to be satisfied. And interestingly enough, you know, 75% of people are actually dehydrated. And one of the interesting ways that people actually hydrate their body, and you may be very well familiar with this, is by eating. We get a lot of water produced when we eat. And so oftentimes when people are actually dehydrated, they feel hungry because that's the pattern. That's the strategy they've used in the past. You're kind of training your brain to say, okay, I'm dehydrated. Let me eat something because I think I'm hungry. And I'm really dehydrated.
Yeah.
But it's true, though, what you're saying as well. Why foods matter? Because with all the synthetic nonsense that's out there, I mean, the body doesn't know how to process any of these things. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, I mean, you know, you talk about, you know, high volume or high value, you know, vitamins. I personally prefer to get those from live foods. I don't do very well in supplements and things like that, simply because it's foreign to my body in one particular way. I'm very sensitive to it. So what I do, I juice. I love juicing. Mm-hmm. And it makes a huge difference. The other part that I do is I grow my own sprouts. And that's a lot of fun. And so talking about saving money, boy, you know what? If you juice, you grow your own, you know, fruits and vegetables, your herbs, your sprouts, you actually save a lot of money because you're also less hungry.
Yes. And a seed replenishes itself. Mm-hmm. So awesome.
Also, another thing, you know, in regards to sweeteners, I don't know about you two, but I have a stevia plant. So anytime I need something sweetened, I'll use I'll pull leaf off the plant and use that. I dehydrate the leaves, and if I want to do like a, you know, a sauce, I make my own sauces for spaghetti. Well, what I do is I will crumple up the leaves if I need anything, any sweetener in there, and I put it in that way. That way there's no sugars, no high fructose corn syrup. I don't believe in, what is it, Splenda? I don't want chemicals in my body. So why not just have a plant and pull the leaf off the plant? You know?
So what are your thoughts on agave sugar, agave syrup? Is that good?
I don't use any of that stuff. I only use local honey. Yeah.
I've not tried agave. I've only tried the stevia plant. My sister's was a type 1 diabetic. So growing up, we weren't allowed to have sugar because if she couldn't have it, we couldn't have it. So that's why stevia plant is good because it doesn't hurt those who are diabetic or type 1.
Yeah. That's what I tell a lot of my patients, my clients. I tell them, if you wouldn't give your child that, why are you eating it?
Mm-hmm.
So that covers the nutritional aspect. So now let's go to fitness. You know, how do you manage your clients about fitness?
Again, it's just activities, right? So we look at their time. We look at what they can tolerate, what they can do, what level they're at. a lot of people just think that they need to go out and be gangbusters and run a marathon the next day. Not going to happen. So it's mainly just, you know, taking the one at a time. In order to get up, you got to lift one, but you also got to put that foot down in order to get to the other one. So it's not just a high road all the time. You got to get up, down, up, and down. So there's going to be struggles in it, but I just guide them. I do a lot of yoga. I do a lot of Pilates. I do a lot of meditation. Body weight stuff. Believe in resistance more than just heavy weight. Especially our women. We just need to be lower. And mainly in our life, as long as we're going to be able to sit in a toilet, we'll be actually independent. If you've got to get somebody to help you up to get up and down off of a toilet, you're no longer independent. I always flex legs, knees. We got to stay flexible. If you can't carry your own body weight, you got problems coming. So I tailor it to what they need. Sometimes I've got really big athletes. My son, who is a junior Olympic athlete now, who has been blessed with some amazing hurdle legs. He's a 400 hurdler. He's a completely different animal than I would take some of my clients who could barely, you know, walk or run an entire 400 meters. So it's a matter of just finding out what works for them, and then we tailor it. We really talk about what can work and what can't work, what their experiences was, because a lot of times it's just mainly the experience that they had doing some type of workout, right? If we can take that experience away and just get them to do this exercise, whether it's in their home or out at the gym, we'll get some really good response with it.
Very good. Very, very good.
So I'm going to mute my mic back and forth, only because there's a lot of interference down here. My producer is giving me notes through the chat here.
Sorry, guys. Aubrey has so much amazing information, and the way because we're on BlueJeans, the way BlueJeans works is it will, whoever is the loudest, that's where the majority of the vocals will be coming from. So even though Aubrey's giving us such amazing information, the gentleman that is in your general vicinity is speaking louder than she is. So I'm hearing his conversation. I feel like a weird voyeurist. I'm like the creepy person. I don't want to be the creepy person.
Creepy.
Well, I'll let him know that I have a boxer friend that's gonna, you know, box with him.
That could work. I am boxing after I'm done with your show, so it's gonna be great. Wait, Aubrey, what do you think of boxing as a form of exercise?
So I actually trained in MMA for a little while. I absolutely love it.
I love you.
Here's my problem with boxing is I used to beat up boys growing up, and I enjoy hitting.
Me
so
too.
I had to learn to control it. So I absolutely love boxing. One, it gets all of your frustrations out of whatever that day is. And then all of the muscles that you use for it is by far the funnest. And then you throw some kickboxing in there, a couple of slam your body down and a couple of chest punches and a face punches, mm-hmm. and your world's over, or at least their world's over.
God, it's just such an amazing feeling, isn't it?
Yes.
It makes me feel so strong, you know, like a take on the world. I love it.
So we were at an MMA training night, and I don't know if you've ever done the telephone pole. Have you ever, or telephone booth? It's called telephone booth.
I don't know if
so. One person stands against a pole where they can't back up, and the line of people. You get a line of all of everybody else in front of you. And the person that's against the pole, all you do is get to block. The person that comes up, they're the hitters. So they're hitting constantly, right? And you're knocking everywhere. And the person on the pole is all just blocking. Oh, my God, that is fun. Like, on both ends. Like, to be able to block somebody's punches because they're just swinging and you're not able to swing back. Mm-hmm. And you're blocking. But to be able to land a hard punch, like a real one, that's fun.
It's a
fun.
Good feeling.
Now, I'll never get in a ring and fight. I'll do the practice stuff.
I got my focus mitts. We're good. You got your boxing gloves and your focus mitts. And that's, I love boxing somebody who actually has focus mitts because I know they're not going to hit me in my moneymaker.
Yeah. And no moneymaker shot.
Yeah. Yep. Everything's good until I get hit in the face, and then I'm like, oh no, then the beast is released.
You keep that beautiful face, girl. Keep that face.
Oh, thank you.
That's funny.
So just so I'm clear, I mean, you know, all this aggression that's inside of you, and you just enjoy getting that out by this kind of boxing, this kind of MMA, or is there something else to this? Because quite personally, I mean, you know, I'll get my aggression by working out or doing things like that. I used to play rugby, and that was pretty intense. But I just can't see myself fighting with somebody. It's just still way too foreign for me.
I don't know how you feel about it, Wendy, but I think it's just a whole different platform when you know two people are doing the same athletic thing and it's not out of anger. It's really just out of pure enjoyment of just wanting to beat the pulp out of somebody.
And that's why when you are boxing, you always box with somebody who is at the same level as you are. I'm not going to go and box a newbie because unfortunately, that's just not fair to them. Just like I would not go and really just flat out box my coach because that's not fair. So you find somebody who's your equal and you just really, when you're sparring, you're encouraging each other the whole time.
Yeah.
To make it
it's
a very positive.
Than actually trying to land.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you just say that you beat up your coach? Because you said it wasn't fair if you challenged
Oh, no,
him.
No. I wouldn't be fair because he's so much more advanced than I am. So it wouldn't be fair. Although he's the only one I spar with. I wouldn't go all in a full on, like, in the ring boxing. I like sparring, but I will not let any. I will not hit somebody in the face. I will not let somebody hit me in the face.
Yeah.
Body shots, that's all open.
That's not what I heard. I heard that you said you were better than your coach, and it made fair that you know.
No, I was saying I wouldn't spar with a newbie because it's not fair to them, and I wouldn't spar with a coach because it's not fair to me.
No, you didn't say for me.
Oh, right? My bad. Sorry.
So, yeah, you
I
go
misspoke.
Rewind this tape, and you know that you. No, it's interesting.
I know what you meant.
See?
I know what you meant. I sparred with my coach, and we were doing shin touches. And his shin, Sammy, I don't know if you saw him. I can't remember his last name. He was on MMA. Oh, my gosh. He was on the MMA reality show. Anyway, Sammy something. We were sparring, and we were tapping shins. And his shin seriously is like a metal pole. Wow. And I got a hairline fracture by touching his shin with my shin.
Yeah.
Just tapping. Like, you got it. Like, I would never not my coach. Mm-hmm. No, ma'am.
I agree.
So let's change the topic, and I'm going to mute myself again because it's getting a lot noisier. But here's an important topic, and I think it's important for people because it's a topic that's not discussed enough, but about domestic violence. And so share a little bit about whatever you want to share about your experience, but also your views, and any thoughts and advice you can give people.
So I think this is a subject that's very hidden among a lot of homes. You would be completely surprised after I came out with my story back in Domestic Violence Month a couple of months ago here in Houston. KHOU actually did a spotlight on my story. 4 years ago, I was dating a guy who was in St. Pete. And of our 5 years of dating, there was three incidents total, two incidents within our relationship that I just blamed it on whatever, you know. You think about the 80-20 rule, 80% of our lives were great. He only beat me once. I know. Bear with me. And then, you know, you think about the 80-20 rule. We ate the same. We worked out the same. We looked great. We dressed the same. Our friends are the same. Everything was all the same. And then it just came to when we were in closed doors, things were so different and they just got different. And it isn't like overnight that you were like, oh, my gosh, I'm in a domestic violence issue. Oh, my gosh, he's so protective. It literally happened over a 5-year process. And our last year together, I woke up to I had a tracking device put in my car. I figured out he had cameras in the house and mics listening and watching me throughout the day. I noticed that every time I was in the bathroom doing my makeup, he would call me and be like, hey, where are you? I'm like, putting on my face. So it's just, you got to see the signs. And unfortunately, I didn't read them because I was so caught up in this whole 80-20 rule, right? Like, I was shown so many times in so many other ways of him constantly calling me, always asking where I'm at. He would get mad if I was at an interview or a set or if I was somewhere and he called me and I didn't answer my phone, he would get angry. So eventually I just started answering my phone and I let it play, and he'd sit on the phone for however long that meeting took until I could pick up the phone and he could hear me and talk to me. And I didn't, and I thought, because he lived in St. Pete and I lived here in Houston, that it was his insecurities. He just wanted to know if we lived in the same city, things would be okay. But it wasn't. And so my message that I had to all the women when I was speaking to them was, the signs are there and you see them. And unfortunately, it takes a really strong person to see them and want to make that move. Because when I found myself in there, and I was, at the time I lived in St. Pete because I gave up my job here in Houston. I moved out there. We got engaged and he beat me. And when I left, I had nowhere to go. I was like, oh, like I have no money. Like, we ran out of all my money. We played with all my money and a trust fund kid. And oh my God, we didn't use any of his money. We always used all my money. And I still have bills. I have a 15-year, at the time it was, you know, he was 11 or 10. Oh my gosh, like, what am I going to do? Like, where am I going to go? And that moment right there is why women go back. They have nowhere to go and they have no money to do it. And that right there put me back at his door going, I can't get home. How am I supposed to get home? And fortunately for us, there was a lawyer friend that was in there, and he said, Aubrey, this relationship's toxic. I said, really? Did you tell him? And then, you know, I asked him, I said, did you tell your friend what you did? And he was like, what? And so he's like, yeah, Aubrey, this is toxic. He goes, what do you need? I said, I have no money. He's taken all my money. And in the background, my ex-fiance said, she doesn't need anything. She's got money. She's got money. He looked at me and he goes, how much do you need? I said, I just need gas money to get home. He gave me a hotel that night. He purchased, our friend purchased my hotel for that night. The next morning, I came back to a mover's truck that I would only give him back the engagement ring if he would pack up back all my stuff. Gave him the engagement ring, and I came back the exact next day, October 1st of 2013. And that is where I realized where women go back. Because if it wasn't for that one friend that said, no, this is toxic, I probably would be begging him to keep me. Because I had nowhere to go, had nowhere and no money to get there. I even called the women's shelter at the time out in Tampa, and they needed me to press charges. And here's what's so crazy is I didn't want to press charges on him because I loved him. Like, I really did. Even though he beat me, I was madly in love with him. Like, he was everything to me. And I felt like I was supposed to be his Ruth and help him through all this junk. And I'm going to bring him to the Lord and all, you know, all this stuff. But thank you for the friend that I had in that house, because if he didn't go there, I probably would be a very bad case right now, which we just had a case in Houston that a girl was found in her garage wrapped in incense in a plastic bag for 2 full weeks because her boyfriend beat her up. So I don't know my outcome, but what I do know is I want to let women know that there's help out there. The women's shelters will help you if you just go and do what you needed to do. The women's shelter wouldn't take me in St. Pete because I didn't press charges. But luckily, our friend was there and was able to give me money to get home. I got home, and I did only thing that I knew what to do. Two things. I prayed really, really hard. I was probably depressed for the first 9 months I came back home. But I worked my butt off. Like, I was like, I have $0. I have no time whatsoever to even think about complaining. I gotta go. And I tell you what, within 1 year, when all of my cells were redone in my body, 1 full year, I was back on my feet. And now I'm a person who can speak about that journey to every woman out there. There's help, there's a place to go, and you're not alone. There are many, many people that have come out because they heard my story about a sister that's being abused, how they're being abused, where to go, how to get help, helping with phone call only, with people just wanting to talk about their situation. If there is a woman out there that finds themselves in that situation, don't lose hope. Reach out, and you can do it anonymously. Is that how you say that word?
Anonymous.
You can do it anonymously. But there's help, and I'm so grateful and thankful. 4 years fast forward, my life had a bit of a hiccup, but I'm back, and I'm back with a vengeance. And I've got 2 years, and my boy's in college, and I can't even imagine what my life's gonna look like after I don't have to wake up and cook him breakfast and drive him to school, because I'm gonna get so many hours back in a day. I can probably do another job. 3 more jobs.
Yeah, that or 3 more minutes, one of the two.
That too. Oh, there you go. 3 more minutes.
So you're totally amazing, Aubrey. That's incredible. And so I'm going to ask you a quick question and mute myself again. So when you look back at your experience, you know, was there a time perhaps early on in a relationship that you can pinpoint to that, and if knowing what you know now would have made a different decision and gotten out of that relationship or done something else? You know, what are some of those signs that you can, early signs that you can identify? You know, what are some things that you can do too? And also, you have to answer all this in less than a minute.
Hurry.
You know, also, you know, finding your own independence, you know, helping women find their independence.
Well, one, I would tell you that the first time he cheated on me and we were just dating, that was my first biggest sign. I should have let him go then. But I believed in all of his words. And because I truly at that time was loving him more than I love myself or love my Lord, I had to get grounded, and I wasn't grounded. And it was a hard way of getting grounded. But I tell you that there are signs, and there's immediate signs. The first time when you are dating somebody and they're not fully committed to you, they'll never commit to you. So I would tell everybody right now, when that first sign of them telling you they love you, they're having sex with you, and you are totally committed, and they branch out and do it while y'all are dating, get out. It's not worth it. What was your next question?
No, finding that independence.
Yeah, you know, you got to love yourself. If you can't tell yourself when you look in the mirror that I love you, you've got a hot body, you're amazing, you're the one for me. And if you can't tell yourself that, then there's not anybody else that's going to say that to you. So you've got to be able to say that to yourself. Independence doesn't mean alone. Independence means that you can stand on your 2 feet with everybody pushing you where you need to go. And you've been led by one person, and that's him up there. Independence is nothing about being lonely.
You know, and with those, you know, magical words, you know, I'm going to wrap it up. This is amazing.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed listening to you, and I apologize for all background noise. And, you know, with this wonderful technology, we get to do things that we otherwise couldn't do. And that's why I'm excited about this platform. But we have some cool things coming up, better technology and better sound control in the future. So
yeah.
Once again, Aubrey, thank you so much. Wendy, of course. And I'm Dr. Bart Rademacher, prescription for your transformation. Hashtag real people. Hashtag real conversations. Bringing you new voices, new solutions, your transformation, but really bringing that authentic world to you so that you can find your own path and listen in to other people's discoveries so that you can change your life. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Dr. Rademacher's Prescription for Transformation. Join Dr. Bart Rademacher live right here on Radio Star Worldwide each week or on demand 24/7.